I hope that I'm not given to hyperbole, but I think this gentleman, well, I know he's one of the most prolific poets in this country, but I think that he may well be one of the most intense, one of the most religious, in the broadest of senses, one of the most influential writers ever to come out of this state. He was born in Sacramento. William Everson, he has led up to now an astonishing life. He was attending Fresno State College. He was about 22 or 23. And he happened to come across a collection of poems by Robinson Jeffers. It just knocked him out. He left school a couple of years later. He married. He left school to write. After he had been drafted as a conscientious objector during World War II, his second wife introduced him to Catholicism. And then in 1949, he entered the Dominican Order as a lay brother, Brother Antoninus. He was in that order for 20 years. He left it in a remarkable fashion. He was reading a long poem of his, he wrote in 66, called A Tendril in the Mesh. He was reading it at California State University, Davis. At the end of reading this poem, which of course was written while he was still in vows, he stripped off his religious habit. He left the platform, and he also left the church at that very moment. He continued to write, and as I said, he's a prolific writer. He now has 33 volumes to his credit, volumes of verse. He has two other volumes of a book on Robinson Jeffers and also a book called Archetype West, The Pacific Coast as a Literary Region. Among those volumes of verse, The Residual Years, published in 44, 48, and also in 68. The Crooked Lines of God, The Rose of Solitude, Man Fate, which is subtitled The Swan Song of Brother Antoninus, and The Mask of Drought, which is from Black Sparrow Press, and it's been out for about 10 days. He held a Guggenheim Fellowship in 1949. He received the Commonwealth Club of California's Silver Medal in 67 and the Shelley Memorial Award in 78. And in that same year, he received the Book of the Year Award for the Conference on Christianity and Literature in 1978. He is presently the poet in residence at the University of California, Santa Cruz. I've just recently, of course, had an opportunity to briefly read The Masks of Drought, and again, I am reminded that William Everson is not really a delight to read, not like ice cream is a delight, but he confronts ambiguities, religious and moral ambiguities, with an intensity that I think people should confront ambiguities. Quite honestly, it's an honor to introduce this poet and this scholar, William Everson.
It's a rather unnerving experience to come to Los Angeles and be drenched. We expected in Santa Cruz and points north, but it's not exactly what we brace ourselves for when we come to Los Angeles. And yet, once again, it's very refreshing, but at the same time, it causes for somewhat of a disequilibrium within the self as you begin to approach a point of communication and of expression. The poems I'm going to read tonight are all about the drought. And we'll just have to make a transposition in the psychic weather in order to relate to that. I think all Californians live in the threat of drought enough that we can easily enough do it. The extremes of changes, you know, in our external lives often account for extremes of, for the shifts within ourselves, these creative shifts that come about through, in one sense of the word, the poet is always waiting for things to happen outside of himself, happen to him in order to be delivered into creative expression. There's a kind of a helplessness about the poet in that regard, that you're rather completely at the mercy of your own mood or at the life rhythm. Perhaps not at the mercy so much as, that's one way of putting it, but you're certainly at the disposition of the vaster rhythms of your life. And sometimes you'll go for years without getting anything done. And then some such subtle thing as a change in the climate. I hadn't written for many years before the drought came along. And then suddenly my own inner drought found its external moment or justification, and the poems began to come about the drought itself, about the crisis. Somehow you write your way through your crises, whether they're external or inner. It becomes your way of life, your way of coping, where I think every charismatic vocation has that capacity. It gives us, it presents to us the mode of solving the crises of our life. That's one of its great uses for us. It certainly is true of the poet. So what I'll do, I'll try to get into these drought poems. All of them will move towards crisis states of being in one case or another. I don't think there's any such thing as a really good passive poetry. I'll begin by reading a poem called Rattlesnake August, and it's right in the heart of the drought theme. A rainless winter, week on week sun edging the hills in the frost gray grip. Summer broke dry. A tightness of heat clenched the sterile coast, a fierce parching. No fog fended the light, a thread of fire stung the rustling air. By midsummer's moon, leaves littered raw earth. Then late one dusk, our Labrador bitch slogged home half lame, bleeding a little under the jaw, but we thought nothing of it, likely stuck on the thorn. Morning found her prostrate, the head hugely swollen, the throat hemorrhaging blood. Snake bite, said the vet, and she's too far gone. Tonight she'll die. We stared at each other. Rattlesnakes in Big Creek Canyon? Unheard of. But the vet shook his head. This goddamn drought forces them down from the mountain dens to creek water. We've known places this year no snake's ever been seen in before, and we're not done yet. Now, with night dropping, we sit in the hot, unnatural silence, awaiting the friendly scratch at the door we know will not come. This loss is a wound, tearing the sensitive fabric of our life, and it aches in us. We think of the snake out there in the dark, lurking, the vibration of evil, coiling under the roots of trees, alive beneath stones, listening. I see tears blind your eyes. Tonight I know you will tear my snake totem down from the wall and burn it bitterly, your lips moving, your eyes blue ice. I do not begrudge it. Your way is the best. For two themes contend here, the loss and the menace. Double pang of the twisted heart. We brace for disaster, a vast conflagration, a holocaust born on an eastern draft sweeping down to the sea, burning home sites and bridges, driving the coastal population out onto the roads. It's yet to happen. Rather, this subtle insinuation, gliding secretly into the warm nest to spit venom. Because sunspots distantly flare on the fountain of fire, must something displace, hit at man's life, take his friend and companion, whatever he loves be taken, must go. I leave the table, step out under stars, smelling dryness in the air, and death, the presence of death, lurker in the dark, where are you? Harried by heat, possessed of a taut desperation, the serpentine itch, driven down from some cool, commodious hole higher up, he descends, seeking water, water, Ross Lake for his thirst. For he too loves life. He too craves comfort, smells it cunningly out, and when fate accosts, licks his lip and stabs back. Well, suddenly we're into it.